Introduction to object factories. So, a brief history. To talk about object factories, you need to know what about objects. And to talk about objects, I'm going to explain to you the purpose. And I talked to a few of you in between sessions, and some of you already are implementing object-oriented programming. Some of you are not. Some of you are actually here to learn about how to migrate from procedural code to a proper OO development for scalability, reliability, and so on. So once upon a time, we used to code what's called spaghetti code. It was procedural code fusion, had no objects, it had no CFCs. So that's when frameworks actually came along and they helped us a lot. Some of you used to use like page controllers. You used to include like CFF on the top of every page, and that became handy. Then you start doing includes. Then some fuse box came along and separated your presentation layer from your business logic. So you start using CF tags, CF includes, modules. Then ColdFusion MX came along, and it gave us the ability of using objects. So the first thing that everybody did is took all their functionality and stuck it into a big object. So now you're object-oriented programming. Very nice. How reusable is that code? Absolutely none. Actually, I did the same thing. I migrated my shopping cart into a probably 7,500 line of code object, and that was my shopping cart object. And that was it. So this big object, it's the first transition. Yeah, very nice. So we're going to the right direction, but still not enough. It's still not the finish line. So there's a lot of problems that come, or not problems, but there's issues that people don't think about when they start coding objects, and a lot of names that you're going to hear about, encapsulation and loose coupling and cohesion and all that stuff, which I will explain shortly. And once you start breaking your objects down, then you run into problems with dependencies and wiring your objects together and relations. So let's talk a little bit about the object. And the object is, it's really basic, and ColdFusion is a CFC. And I will define the basics and what is the lifecycle of an object, what are the constructors or the lack of, and some workarounds, and define the very types, the different type of objects you will use on your day-to-day programming. So the basis, the object, there's three concepts. There's a class, there's the object, and there's the methods. The class is pretty much the abstract code that defined an object. And an instance, it says object, but an object is a particular instance of a class, which means when you use a create object, when you use a CF object and you create a new one, you define it, you create an instance of that object, you put it in a variable, the variable is actually a pointer to the instance of that object. And the object will contain methods, or for us, CF functions. The life cycle of an object is pretty simple. You create the object, that's done through CF object or create object. That will automatically, and a lot of us don't even know this, it will run some pseudocode, which is a pseudo constructor. Everything that you, all the code that you define in between your CF component and your first function will get run automatically when you create that object. In addition to that, ColdFusion has no constructors. On Java or Flash, a lot of us ColdFusion developers actually know some action script. You'll know that when you define a class, you can actually define a method with the same class name. It will be the class constructor. So we decided among some ColdFusion people to commonly get around it with an init method. And every time we create an object, and this is really important when once you start using frameworks like ColdSpring, is that you have the init method, and the init method returns that same object. So the return type on your method will be the object name, and then you'll just return this. Then the object have methods, it has functions, you run all these functions, you use the object, and eventually the object will cease existent. And ColdFusion has no deconstructor method, and personally, I haven't had that much need for it anyway, so not a big deal there. Then this I took for Sean Corfield, thank you very much. Object types, there's two types of objects, is your business model layer and your service layer. The business model defines people, places, and things. And your service layer is the persistent objects that you cache usually on application or something like that. And they're stateless. They really don't have a particular state, but they will define your service layers and infrastructure. By the way, if any of you want to interrupt me while I'm talking, and just raise your hand, ask the question, that'll be fine. I don't mind that. So what problems do we usually have when we work with OOP? Well, there's the object creation, initialization. So who creates the object? Who initializes the object? I mean, who says who should know how to initialize the object? We'll run into a lot of situations where we're going to initialize object inside other objects. But really, those objects should not know where your initial object is or how to initialize it or what to pass, all the arguments. And the problem is, if you have it all around, then every time you make a change, you need to change it on every single object that knew about that object. So it starts becoming much more complex once you start growing your application. There's all the object relationships. Yet again, if an object actually requires some other objects to exist and to function properly, you need a place to pass that object to it. When you move objects around, cohesion, loose coupling, I really won't get into detail on all this. And unit testing. Unit testing is a problem when your object depends on a lot of other objects. I'm saying object too much. We should actually call it something else. Anyway, unit testing is a problem when you have a lot of dependencies because it's hard to isolate that particular object that you want to test on. So this is a problem that factories, for example, solve, and I will show shortly how they solve it, but allowing you to actually replace all the dependencies by mock object of abstract object of an interface that returns just what you need so you can test a particular functionality of one single object. So here where design patterns come in place. Design patterns, although for those of you who are not familiar with it, it's really simple. It's software engineering, a design pattern is a general, repeatable solution to a commonly occurring problem. That's it. So over the history, when people design and program in object-oriented fashion, they run into problems, and then they have documented a common solution for those problems. For some of you, design patterns may sound a little bit complicated or too much work, or why should I do this? And that's really normal when you start working with object-oriented design because you haven't run into the problems yet. So it's kind of like someone telling you, you will run into this problem, this is how you will solve it, but until you get there, you usually don't see why or how powerful is that solution. But I encourage you not to preach design patterns, not to swear by them, but do learn them and know that they're there for a reason, and it's just a methodology. It's a guidance to solve your problems. You don't have to apply them to the T and go absolutely nuts with that. So the object factory is a design pattern. The object factory, the main role of an object factory is pretty much just create these objects that we just talked about. And why? Because the object factory, if you have a centralized place to create these objects, then you're reducing some of the complexity I just mentioned. So the definition object factory, the main role is collect information and to create and initialize objects for you. And then invoke the class constructor, which is pretty much initializing them. And it's really simple. Factory patterns is just another name for the object factory. So why create an object factory? Well, the factory will create the objects for you. It's a centralized place to store the path. It's a centralized place to know how to initialize all your objects. If you choose to add an argument to the constructor, you only need to add it in one place. If you need to swap an object and move it somewhere else, you need to do it in only one place. if you have a problem, or if you actually work in a new, service layer for logging, and you want to implement a new logging service, all you need to do is change it in one single place, and all your objects, as long as it implements the same methods, will automatically be using a new logging service. So it's really useful for swapping objects. It's useful for centralizing all the dependencies. Inversion control is taking the factory just a step forward. With the factory method, you typically actually pass the factory to every object, and every object is aware of your factory. And when they need another object, a dependent object, all they have to do is talk to the factory and ask them, please provide me with an instance of the user object. And they don't need to know where it is or how to initialize it, what's the full path to it. All they need to do is actually ask for that object. With inversion control, defined as a programming principle that can be used to reduce coupling, inheriting computer applications. Well, that may not mean much to you. Dependency injection is a specific form of inversion control. What it does, it allows you to pretty much just pass all the dependent objects to your to the ones that need them. As a design pattern, architectural model, sometimes also referred as inversion control. Although technically speaking, just like I said, it's just an implementation of inversion control. What this does, in simple words, is that if you have a service that needs five objects, this will pretty much just make sure that this service gets those five objects properly initialized, and that's it. The user service, or anything that actually is being injected, they don't even know about the factory. They don't know about dependency injection. They don't know about the inversion control. All they know is that when they need these services, when they need these other objects, all the dependencies, that will be there for them. So the design pattern, just like I said, is pretty much a factory. And just like any other creation object, all it does is create the object for you and inject all the dependencies to them. It's usually done by three different ways. Either setters, which means you'll have methods with the prefix set something. And for example, if a user service needs a user DAL, you will have a set user DAL, and the factory will automatically pass that to it. Or constructor methods, which is if your init method, the constructor, is taking arguments, and it will take as an argument every single dependency that it has. The constructors are usually less code to implement, but they don't solve cyclic dependencies. A cyclic dependency is when your logging service needs some database bean, and your database bean needs a logging service. So when you have two objects that each one needs an instance of each other, and you don't want to create more than one instance, we're working with singletons. Singleton, just so you know, it's an R design pattern that forces a particular object to have one and only one instance. In ColdFusions, we usually don't implement, and there's no code to actually force this, but we tend to scope some objects, some instances in our application scope, and just use that. So that, technically speaking, is just a singleton. So instead of having more than one instance of each object, if you use setters and dependency injection, you can actually just initialize each object that need each other, and then pass an instance to each other. So you only have one instance of each. Can you actually see this? Because on my screen, it goes smaller and smaller. I just had too much to say here. But thankfully, actually, you have everything in your slides. So again, dependency injection. This slide is about how it can actually help you with unit testing. And it's what I briefly mentioned before. If you have dependency injection and you have some objects that are depending on others, you can create another configuration for your factory where you pass only mock of the objects that it depends on, so you can unit test. And unit testing pretty much just means that you'll test one and only one object. So every time you make a change, you unit testing means that you have a set of tests or test cases that you have, your object needs to pass or fail, and that will, and you have some methods that you actually define that it has to succeed, some methods, some function calls that it has to fail, and you run this test just to make sure that it maintains integrity, and your changes will not break anything on the code. You guys have really no questions about this, so it's too basic yet. All right, I guess we'll get there. All right, so to achieve this dependency injection, you can actually pass mock objects of collaborating objects, whereas in production, you'll pass the real instances of the objects they depend on. All right, so with all this, you probably, you knew I was getting there. So ColdSpring, it's a factory, and in fact, it's a factory that does dependency injection. So why using ColdSpring, and what is ColdSpring? Well, ColdSpring was inspired by Spring Framework. And the Spring Framework, some say, as Dave Ross said in CF United last year, it's probably the best thing that happened to programming in 20 years. Well, that has some weight right there. And in fact, everybody that you talk on, everybody, all the framework gurus, if you hear, I don't know, Joe Reinhardt and Doug Hughes and Peter talking outside or over beers at the bar, they all say that the main framework and everything that they absolutely must use on every project is ColdSpring. So some of them don't even use their own framework on every project, but they do use ColdSpring. So that's how important it is. It definitely helps you on a lot more ways that you can think of. And if you start implementing it, on the long run, you'll find that it's hard to program without it. So like I said, it was inspired by Spring, and it's not really a port of Spring, but it solves exactly the same problems. So ColdSpring, it's an inversion control framework. It's actually dependency injection, and what it does, you define all your dependencies and all your objects in an XML, completely declarative way, and ColdSpring will handle creation and initialization for you. If ColdSpring sees that there's some dependencies, it will actually initialize the dependent object first and then pass it to the one that actually needs it, fully initialized. Because it's all XML-based, it's actually really easy to swap. It helps in swappability. Components don't care about the collaborator's implementation, which means that when a component needs something, it just knows that it's expecting an object and it knows the method that it's invoking. Which means with ColdSpring, you heard a lot probably lately about duck typing. It's been all over the blogs. Everybody's been blogging about it since CF United, and it hasn't stopped. What it means is that you can easily swap an object for a different one as long as it implements the same methods. So if it quacks, it's a duck, that's it. As long as you can call a method and it does the same thing, you can actually swap the object by a completely different one. And this is extremely helpful. For example, on a real life example, if you have a logging server that's validating users against an Active Directory using LDAP, and there's a problem with the Active Directory server, with ColdSpring, you can easily create another smaller object that validates against an XML file or a text file or whatever you want, and swap it in a single place on your config file, and now everything that was using authentication against the Active Directory now is authenticating against an XML file with pretty much no downtime, because you can easily swap, implement the same methods, and it will just work. So it's perfect for unit testing, because again, just like I explained before, you can swap all these dependencies for mock objects or abstract classes, and you can test the functionality of one and only one component. This I borrowed from Dave Ross. Is actually a really useful slide that defines, breaks down a typical application, web application. It defines, you'll have your database models, you have utility classes, you have other business logic, and then you'll combine all those into what's called a service layer. And the service layer, it should be the only one that your clients talk to. A client could be, again, it could be a Mac 2 application, a Model Glue application, any web application, doesn't have to have a framework, Ajax client, Flask application, desktop application, you name it. Any type of front-end application, we should only talk to your service layer. Service layer abstract and encapsulates the business model, the functionality of your application, and talk to all these classes, all the DAOs and all the gateways and all the transfer objects and pretty much all the other smaller objects behind it, everything that's broken down into smaller pieces so they can be reusable across your entire application or even other applications and portable. The service layer talks to them and you just talk to the service layer. The service layer is perfect for SOA or it's really easy to create web services on the service layer. It's easy to create flash remoting facades or facades to talk to Flex or Ajax clients, an Ajax facade. The facade is nothing else but a different phase for a set of functionality. It pretty much is, it has no business logic in itself. All it does, it's a centralized place. Think of it as a central controller to talk to all the different business logic behind it. So I want to show you some code examples because that's usually the easiest way of seeing all what I'm talking about. So to do this with Ray Kenden's permission, I just took apart the Galleon Forms, which is an open source forum application that Ray Kenden wrote. Widely used by the Confucian community, just like every other piece of the 100 application that Ray has out there. And I took it apart, I examined, because I wanted to port it to an MVC framework. MVC is an R design pattern, stands for Model View Controller. Chances are that after a full day in the Frameworks Conference, you already heard that term about 100,000 times. So I wanted to port Galleons to an MVC type of framework, and I chose that, and then I saw how all the CFCs and all the business logic was handled, and I decided to show an example of how it is. So, before you ask, I'm not running home sites for choice, it's just I have limited RAM on this laptop. I use CF Eclipse. However, since I'm running VMwares and I'm running ColdFusion, I'm running a whole bunch of stuff behind the scenes. An Eclipse, as you probably know, doesn't use any RAM at all. Yes. So, home site is just faster to show you some code. So, for example, you take the Galleon Forms, and Ray did a good job here. So, these are singletons for all the different components that that he uses for a business model. He uses a user, he uses a conference, forums, threads, messages, ranks. Everything separated on their own components, very well done. You separated all the different components of your model into their own objects, but each one of these objects need to talk to other objects because it doesn't do everything by himself. So what happened? Well, you create a user object or a conference object, And you create it as a singleton, which means that every time any controller needs to talk to the database, you go through them all through application.conference for all the conferences needs. Very well. But then, what happens inside conference? Well, conference probably needs some other components. Like, for example, conference needs to talk to the forum component. So I asked Ray, why did he do it this way? And the first answer was, I did not want to break encapsulation. Well, it's true. Good design and good practice is the component should be self-contained. It should not talk to the outside world. It should not talk to the application scope, to the session scope, to the URL scope, form scope. Everything that a component needs should be passed into the component. Component should not know the existence of anything else other than itself. That's called encapsulation. Very well. So because we didn't want to talk to the application scope and we need the forum object, then we created the new forum object inside the conference object. Now we have the one that's running application and the one that's running inside conference. But then you open forum, and forum also needs a thread. And thread was already an application, and now thread is inside forum. And if you start going through this, pretty much every component holds a new copy of other components, which holds new copies of our components, and you're just duplicating everything. Well, it's not a big problem unless you want to make some changes. I mean, yes, it uses more RAM. Also, now each of these components need to know the location of the other ones, and they need to know how to initialize them, and they need to know information about each other that arguably maybe they don't have to know. All they have to know is that a forum needs a thread, and they should know that the thread has a new thread method. But it doesn't need to know where it is or what the thread needs to get initialized or anything else about that. So that is Galleons as it comes. And I created four copies of Galleons with sequential and incremental changes to show you how you can manage your models, manage your components a little bit different in a more scalable way. So on this one, I decided to create a small factory. And the factory on the very basic level, I created an application factory, just like before I placed an application scope. And because I really didn't want to change any code in the controllers or anything like that, I left everything else the same, except that they asked for the factory for an instance of the other objects. So the user, if I need a user object, I don't really go to the user, initialize the user. All I'm saying is, all right, factory, you know how to create objects. Why don't you just hand me a user? And the factory will go create the user and hand it fully initialized. Same with utils, same with conferences, everything, I get it from the factory. So the factory, you may think, well, it's really not that complicated. The initial one I wrote, it's literally, well, it has some extra methods in here that you don't really need, but it's probably no more than the essential ones is with all the comments stripped out is pretty much not more than 50 lines, which include a big if. So the factory has a few, the initial factory without dependency injection, without inversion control, the main idea is that the factory will pass itself to each component. So each component now is depending on the factory. Yes, it is a dependency, but at least it's a single dependency. So you switch from each component depending on all these other components to each component just depending on one centralized component, which is the factory, which is the only one that knows about all the rest of the components. So every time I initialize, like right now, I just initialize the user. And really all I did, as you can see, is I created a user object and I passed the factory to the user object. So what happens now is that, bless you. So what happens now is when I create the user object, I take an argument, the factory is an argument, and is the location, it's pretty much just a pointer to the instance of the factory is already initialized. There is no more than one factory. There's only one, and that factory knows how to create the rest of the objects. When when the user needs a different component like utils, all it does, it asks the factory which was passed to it for a copy of the utils component. So now instead of creating a new instance of this object, I'm using the same instance that resides inside the factory. The factory is the only one that knows where the utils is. When I ask for this, the factory, all it does, the get instance, what it does here, it checks if it's already been initialized. If it has been initialized, it returns that particular object. And if it hasn't, it just creates it, then scopes it, and then returns the object itself. So every time you ask the factory for an object, you'll get the same instance of that object. It's a singleton inside that factory. The way I did it, I scoped it inside the factory, which means that if your factory resides on the application scope, then every object that you ask for will be scoped inside the application scope. And if you scope the factory inside the session scope, then every object that you request that factory will be scoped inside the session scope, because it just resides as long as the factory lives as a singleton inside the factory. So what did I achieve with this is that every component that I need, for example, I know message requires a lot of components. As you can see, the message component does not know how to create or initialize anything else. It doesn't need to create a new instance of everything. All it does, it asks for the factory for the same instance that may or may not have been previously initialized, but if it hasn't, the factory will just create it, scope it, return it, and that's it. So every component now that asks for utils method, component, for example, user needs one, the message needs one, you always get the same instance of that particular component. Then very well. But now, this solves a lot of problems, but everything still depends on the factory. There is some people... Yes?
Would you still use the factory if you weren't working with a singleton, but still to have that abstraction of where it is and how it's created, like a bean object?
Right. I would... The question was, because with podcasting this, is if I would still use a factory if I was not using the components as singletons. And the answer is yes, absolutely. I'll use the factory for persistent objects, service objects, or transient objects, and the transients are the one you discard every time. My factory is not really robust, but just hit it as a proof of concept. It has two methods that you can call. The get instance will actually scope the object for you, and the create object will just return an object without scoping it. And in fact, the get instance, all it does, if it doesn't find it on cache, it will crawl the create object and cache it and then return it. So yes, I will use a factory, and the main reason is, again, it's a centralized place to manage all your objects. To manage dependencies. If you decide to move an object or use a different object for all your logging or security needs, you have to do it in a single place. So even for transient objects, it helps to have everything in a centralized location. I'll answer the same questions with Cold Spring when we get there, because it's a little bit different. All right. So with the factory method now, we resolved a lot of problems. Some people like factory better than dependency injections, although dependency injection is a type of factory. Some people like dependency injection better. There's big arguments. You can Google it, or you'll find a lot of good arguments on both sides. And I'm not sure if there is one better side. Dependency injection, actually, I think it solves more problems at the factory. But there's arguments on both. I mean, you judge it yourself. So let's go now to the next one, which is if I actually wanted to do dependency injection, which is where my components use a factory, but they're not factory aware. they use a factory without knowing that there is a factory behind it. All they know is that every time they need something, that something will be there for them. So if you look at the application, it's exactly the same as the previous one, because again, I didn't want to rework any code. I literally wrote all these different versions of Galleon, and they're all working in probably less than a couple of hours. So again, we use singletons, we scope everything on the we move everything to the application scope. Every time you need application user, utils, conferences, forms, everything gets back from the factory. But now the factory looks a little bit different. Instead of passing itself to every object, all it did is I used the constructor injections, which is you can use setter injections or constructor injections, which is when you call the init method, as you can see here, you will pass instances of your classes. On Galleon Forms, it was rather easy because it's a very simple application. And then all I did is I recursively called the methods inside the same factory to get a singleton of every object. So when I call the conference, I just tell the factory to pass to the conference initializer settings, forums, and utils. But I don't create the objects. I just tell the factory, again, with the same method that I just called of getInstance, to get that singleton that's already in memory and pass it there. So the factory recursively will execute now getSettings. So it will find getSettings, it will create the component, return the component, scope the component as a singleton, and pass it to the create object of the conference object. Now I also need the forum object. I'll go to the forum object, which needs settings. And settings is already a singleton in memory, so it won't create a new instance. It will pass it back automatically to the forums. Then you need a thread, but the thread has not been initialized yet. So I call the conference, which needs a forum, which needs a thread, and then I go back to the thread. And thread needs settings. Settings has been initialized. And you get the idea. Each one will recursively try to find some instance in memory. If it doesn't exist, they will create one and then return that singleton. This also allows for lazy loading, which means all your objects will not get initialized when you initialize the application. They will get initialized on first use, including with their dependencies. So the first time, on this case, yes, they will get initialized when you initialize the application, because it just so happens that application.cfm calls every single one of them. But if he wasn't calling them, then it will get initialized only when you need them. So after all this recursion occurs, then every single component will exist as a singleton once and only once inside the factory. And passing this as I did in the initial on the constructors only work if you don't have any cyclic dependencies. Because if you had a cyclic dependency and you try to initialize a forum, but the forum also needs a conference, and it starts doing all the recursion, it will just get bigger and bigger, never resolved, and just pretty much just crash your server. Or throw a timeout if you have a timeout on your application. That was the question. So the question is, how do you deal with cyclic dependencies? And you can actually easily use this factory. Again, a factory is really a small piece of code. It doesn't have to be complex. You can use it with this factory. And if I had the cyclic dependencies, then you cannot use constructor arguments. You'll have to use setter methods, which means that object A needs to talk to object B. Object B needs to talk to object A. You can have the factory initialize object A, initialize object B, know that they need to run setter functions before it returns those objects. So you initialize object A, initialize object B, do on object A dot set object B equals object B. Then you pass the instance of object B to object A. And then you do the same thing for the R object. You pass object A to object B. Now, because you only do this after you initialize, it's not full initialized. I mean, it is a full initialized object, but it has dependencies. And the factory should be smart enough to run all the setter methods for you. And that's the only way to deal with cyclic dependencies. So, for example, I won't run this code, but if I had to use, if this actually forum and conferences were cyclic dependent on each other, instead of returning this immediately, I could pretty much just do, you know, I'll do a var, although you can't var here, but just imagine it's initialized on the top of the function, and then I put it here. So you do a var, you know, conference object equals create object, and then you do conference dot set forum equals set forum, and then you'll pass the instance of the other object. And here you do a get instance of forum. And you'll do pretty much the same thing here in forums. You'll do a var forum equals create object. And when you finish initializing, you do forum.setConference. And you pass the get instance of your conference. And yeah, conference. And here, yeah, you return forum. And here you return the conference. So you do it in two steps. But once you do it in two steps, you allow to the object properly initialized, return an instance of the object, and then inject all the dependencies with setter methods instead of doing the the constructor methods. And as you can see, you can easily create a small script, a small factory, scripting all your dependencies with Colfusion code. This is really easy for people that don't like configuration files and they think that you should take advantage of Colfusion because you already know Colfusion. It's also nice because you can do a lot of conditional logic inside your code. So you can probably initialize a Microsoft SQL user bean or user DAO against a MySQL user DAO because you have conditional statements and you pass one or the other. So using scripting for factories is actually useful. Some people like it more, like Peter Bell wrote Lightwire, which is based all on scripting language for factories. It's brand new, it's really young, but Peter said he has great plans and hopefully he will have a full release before CF United. So let's get back to the presentation. Code examples with factory with dependency injection. I did all those. When you create a factory, you scope the factory. For example, it's really common to scope the factory in application. Every time you need a component, you get it from the factory. Only the factory knows how to initialize the components. The factory passes an instance of itself to the components, and every time a component has a dependent object, all he has to do is ask for the factory for an instance of that object, and it will get handed to him. So that works. That was the first example that we saw. Then we saw the factory or with dependency injection, which is kind of like how Spring works. And it's almost the same, except that, it's almost the same. You scope the factory and the application. You get the components from the factory. Only the factory knows how to initialize each component. But the factory does not inject itself into the instances of your components, but it injects automatically all the dependencies. This works very well for persistent service layer objects. It does not work very well for transient objects, because you can't inject a transient object when you initialize a scope component, a singleton, because you need a new object every time you use it. That's where the factory method, actually, it's much better than dependency injection, because you can use the factory to get an instance of that object every time. And now we're going to Cold Spring. So Cold Spring is nothing else but a souped-up factory that does dependency injection with a few perks on the side, many perks on the side. And it comes from Spring, so they changed the names. They just renamed a few things. A component is a bean. So a bean is nothing else but a component. It's pretty much just a CFC. And it has its own ID, and it has a class on the configuration file. And I'll show you the example number 4, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. How do I tell this to open with? All right, so a bean is just nothing else but a component. And it has two attributes, or two main attributes, which is class and ID. The ID is the unique reference that you're going to make to the instance of that component. And the class defines what it has to initialize. It's the full path to the CFC that it's initializing. So the simplest one actually has no attributes like the Galian settings. I'm creating a CFC that really depends on no other bean, which means that it's self-contained. All I'm doing is I'm passing the full path to the CFC, and it will initialize it for me. And the dependencies, it doesn't have abstract dependencies, but it supports properties and constructor dependencies. Both of them we already talked about on the scripting example. On the Galian forums, I only use constructor, just like I pretty much just did the port of the same scripting factory that I showed you before on Cold Spring, which is I'm using constructor arguments. And every time, like for the user, it has an argument called settings. And settings, all it does, it reference to another bean again, equal component, that exists within my Cold Spring factory. So it's referring to the Galian settings bean. The naming here makes reference to the ID that I defined on the on all my bean object. So what this is going to do is whenever I ask for a user, it's going to inject the settings component into the constructor of that user component. And what it's going to inject is a reference to another bean that I have that's called settings. So it's going to look for settings, initialize settings, and then pass it to my user object. And as you can see, there's really not much to the basics of Cold Spring. You define the beans, you define the dependencies, and instead of having to script all of them, instead of having to know which one to initialize first, Cold Spring will do it for you. It's the same way you can do constructor arguments, you can do property arguments in here, and they act the same way. I can do a property of and pass a reference to another bean, and instead of passing it to the constructor, it will call the setter method. So if I had a property, actually, if I had a property with the name of settings or utils, it will try to find a function inside my users that's called setUtils. And it will call that function automatically and pass a reference to the other bean that I'm passing as a reference. I don't always have to pass reference to beans. I can actually pass data. A lot of people put configuration in Cold Spring, like I can pass static values, or I can pass objects. I can pass, if I'm using a MySQL or a MSSQL database, I can pass my DSN. I can pass any type of values, not only reference to other beans. So this will become your main configuration file. You can also abstract all the configuration to some external files, but I will not get into that yet today. So an example was ColdSpring, taking Galleon's forms and transporting it for ColdSpring. I was ColdSpring on the application, and ColdSpring being the factory. I'll pass the configuration file, which is this big XML file, to ColdSpring, so it knows exactly what to do. And I will get the components from ColdSpring. ColdSpring will be the only one who knows where my components are and how to initialize them. And ColdSpring will inject all the dependencies into my components. It's exactly the same thing that we did with the manual scripting small framework that we did before, but with a much more robust and enterprise level, used by a lot of people and supported by a lot of people framework. So just like before, we're gonna create an instance of ColdSpring. By the way, to install ColdSpring, all you have to do is either drop it on your web root or copy or map the ColdSpring on your ColdFusion administrator to the ColdSpring folder, and that's it. Then we tell ColdSpring to load beans, and beans again meaning components. We pass the XML file, and ColdSpring does its magic behind the scenes and does everything for you. And just like before, every time you need a component, you call a get bean, and it will pass you a full initialized instance of that component. And inside my components, just like before, they're not aware of anything else. They're not aware of ColdSpring. All they know is that when I initialize my message component, I will get as an argument settings, thread, forms, conference, users, and utils. And I will locally save a pointer to the instance of those components inside my message. So it's exactly just like before. Is that a question?
Yes.
When you're setting up your components and you know you're going to be using ColdSpring, are there best practices for, let's say you have an init function in there and you want to make sure you're using getters and setters to set those properties because you want to leave it open for ColdSpring to either use the init function or to do direct property settings on getters and setters? You need to make sure your getters and setters access was friend or what?
If I need to make sure my getter and setter is what?
The accessor, the rights to it are private.
Right.
Typically, you know, if I'm always going to be setting them to use init, I make the getters and setters private.
Okay. Yeah, it depends. Again, the question was if there's any particular best practices on how to build your components if you know that you are going to use ColdSpring. The best answer is actually is you shouldn't even, the best practice is not even to think about ColdSpring when you're building your components, because your components should be loosely coupled, cohesive, which means your components should not know about each other. They should not, ColdSpring makes it easy to have component dependencies. It makes it easy for components to depend on each other. So best practice is forget about ColdSpring. Make your component as independent as possible. And if they need something, you will get passed to them either by ColdSpring or manually or any other method that you choose. And when you happen to use ColdSpring, when you define it on the XML file, it will actually automatically happen. But like, for example, on your question is, should I need a private getter and setter methods if I'm going to pass everything on the on the constructors? Probably yes, unless you need to override them on a later point, in which case it really depends on your business model. I'm not sure if there's one answer for yes, we should make it private or public. Some people make it a better practice to use only setters and getters and not constructors, just because it's the only way you can get cyclic dependencies work. And then you make all your objects consistent. You don't have some that have constructor arguments and some that have getter and setters. You just have every single object will have a getter and a setter for every single dependency. All those will be public. And that's it. So you never pass anything on the constructor. And that's fine. It's more code. However, once you start using this, maybe if you assisted to Peter Bell's code generation talk, or when you have to repeatedly do things over and over again, you tend to write software that will do this for you. So there is software out there that will generate beans and getters and setters for everything that you do. I know Brian Rinaldi has one out there that will generate ColdSpring XML files and will generate the components and all the getters and setters. And all you have to do then is put your logic into it, but at least the main core, the main legwork, it's already done for you. So that's what I usually do too. I would just have something generate that for me, and then I'll just fill it in with all the rest. It seems like I only have 5 minutes. And I thought I didn't have enough. Go ahead.
I've been using Brian's code generator as well, and I was thinking about how I could use all this as far as the models abstracted out the different layers, it's got the beam, but then it also has the model, the DAO, the gateway, the service, and in this forum example, I'm not seeing anywhere where any
Yeah, you're right. The question is, should you break your model layer even into smaller pieces and using data access object, gateway objects, transfer objects, service layers, and so on? And if you really want to get heavy into object-oriented programming, the answer is yes. This forum example was probably written even before objects were out, the initial one. And because of that and lack of need of actually making and changing the entire backend, and the author chose not to rewrite it in a fully OO environment. And so, yes, I showed this form. I didn't really make it the full object-oriented. Like I said, I took the main code and wrote 4 different examples in less than a couple of hours just to illustrate how to model your objects together. But yeah, you're right. If you go strictly and OO all the way, you'll have a bean which represents a single business object. Then you have a DAO, which is that access object, which will be the CRUD for that bean. It will take the bean and all that. And once you get to that level, then it gets even more repetitive. And every time you find yourself that in every application, you always have a user bean, a user DAO, and a user gateway, and a user service. And that's where code generation can really help, because it's always the same. So the answer, yes. I mean, that's really great. And once you start getting more heavy into object-oriented programming, code generation, or some other frameworks like ORM frameworks like Reactor or Transfer will handle all your DAO or active record patterns for you. And there are some other frameworks that will facilitate some of these, like scaffolding with Reactor, MoleGlue using Reactor or Transfer to do scaffolding for you. There's a lot of options once you want to automate all your process. Well, I had everything running. I'm not even going to show you because I showed you all the examples. But just in case you care, everything works, and I tested everything. This is the original forms by Ray. Then I have my forms 2, which is running a dependency injection. And it's all running on different application namespaces, so each one has to be fully initialized every time. And this is running a single factory, passing itself to each other. And this last one is running ColdSpring. And yet again, it's all talking to the same database. It's all using pretty much the same models, but the way that each component talk to each other and it's depending on each other changes, slightly changes from each implementation, all the way up to where you get ColdSpring. So there are small perks about ColdSpring. Okay, it has auto wiring. So when I showed you the XML, I showed you how you can pass each component to each other. ColdSpring also, for all you lazy people out there, Ray, allows you to auto wire your components together, which means it will read all the metadata from your getters, setters, and your constructor arguments, and find either by name or by type if it just so happens that you have an RBean declaration that matches that getter, setter, or constructor argument, and automatically inject it there for you. Which means that for my ColdSpring definition for this application, I could have easily only have written six lines of code, and tell it to auto-wire all of them for me, and ColdSpring will have done it automatically without having to tell what to pass to each component. So that's a beautiful thing. It helps a lot. It has its pros and cons. Pros is it's so much easier. Con is you don't have explicit documentation of all your dependencies. So you don't have, if you manually wire it, you can look at an XML and say, oh yeah, my user object's using utils. But if you auto-wire, you'll have to go and open the component and say and see that it has either an argument of the constructor or a setter method to inject that in there. And they're telling me to stop, however, I am the last speaker, so we can stay here a couple minutes. I have approval from TerraTech to do that. Unless you want to run out, but anyways. I really have like two more slides. So ColdSpring has auto-wiring, like I said before, pro is less XML, cons not documentation. And the couple of other perks that ColdSpring has for you is one is AOP. This is huge. However, if you're at last at the session right before this on Chris Scott's section, you'll find that really only Chris knows what he's talking about. It's fully integrated with some frameworks out there like MacTo, MolGlue, Callbox. They all have their own implementation of ColdSpring. In fact, MolGlue Unity, it's built on top of ColdSpring, which makes it even easier to even tweak the core MolGlue application. So whenever you need to make any change, if you really want to, if you know what you're doing, if you want to change the core functionality of MolGlue, you could, because it runs on top of ColdSpring, and you can just swap one model for each other. And it does code generation for flash remoting and automatically AES to CFC conversions, mappings. It has a lot of functionality. AOP is huge once you get there. It's great for logging, security, and transactions, and some other benefits. And that was pretty much it, because they told me to stop a few minutes ago, but thank you very much. Any other questions before I let you go? No? You really want to get out of here? Well, me too. So let's meet at the bar tonight, and we can talk a little bit more. Thank you very much. And you have it. Talking about transient objects?
Yeah.
Like DAOs,
yeah.
And
your service layer is reading data.
I got like 20 calls during my presentation. They kept ringing. Yeah. How do you do? Well, if you talk to the ColdSpring people, unfortunately, they will recommend not to use it for transient objects. although you can, but because of all the process that happens in the background and all the additional functionality that it does, trying to find out, reading the metadata, it's kind of heavy every time you create an object. So if you ask them, they'll tell you not to use this. Because it's capable of using transient objects and declaring objects as non-singletons and discard them after creation. I wouldn't recommend it. Like, your chances are, if you have a particular folder where you have your user service and user service uses user DAL and user gateway, unfortunately, chances are you probably want to create the DAL if you use a folder. If you're using some other simple factory methods, as you saw, it's really easy to call the factory. Actually, with Cold Spring you can. Here's how you do it. You can do dependency injection and also have Cold Spring injection when you're doing itself to the bean. And that's what's called bean factory aware. You can do a setter on your component with the